yet. You've always had an excessive appetite, an ambitious soul. She spits each word out at me. But Camellia, ambition leads to insanity. The god of madness feeds on it.
I thought I was supposed to show them all what I could do. Isn't that the point of the carnival? I say with caution.
DuBarry snaps back in her chair. Have you been paying attention during your studies? Has all this been lost on you?
Of course not, I bawl up my fists. I just don't under...
That's right. You don't understand. Because if you did, you wouldn't have done something so foolish. The point is to show them that you're strong enough to complete your role, that you're capable, confident, and proficient in the Arcana, that you can serve this great world.
DuBarry sets her teacup down.
Your little exhibition could have set us back. There was a time when everyone wanted to be the same. Remember your history lessons? The reign of Queen Anne Marie II of the Verdun Dynasty. People were indistinguishable from one another. Imagine if everyone went around wanting to look like you. What if they'd only pay if they could have your features? There'd be millions of your lookalikes walking around. We'd be better off being grey again. Beauty is variety. Beauty is change.
I wouldn't want the world to look like me. I wouldn't want everyone to look the same. Shame and embarrassment ripple through my core, and my stomach threatens to empty. I avoid my reflection in the mirror over the fireplace mantel.
We will not have any more displays like these again. You are to follow the rules and stay on the path. Understood?
I nod.
And if you can't, we will be forced to take more drastic measures. Simply because you're born a bell doesn't mean you're entitled to be one, DuBarry says.
Her words slam into me. I drop the teacup. Bree rushes to help me. We wipe at the streaks of brown on my day dress. My wrist is puffy and red from the burn of hot liquid. But nothing shocks me more than DuBarry's words. What does she mean I'm not entitled to be a bell? I'm one of only six. What else could I be? Where would I live? What would I do? Would the goddess of beauty take away her blessing, my arcana? Would I become a Gree? The questions knock around my head.
I bet in all your vigorous plotting, you didn't learn about Heather Beauregard.
I tried to tell her about that bell once, but Camellia never likes to listen, Mother. Elizabeth smiles at me. I remain expressionless, even though I'd love to slap the smug grin off her face. I don't want DuBarry to know the worries and questions humming inside me. I don't want Elizabeth to see that she's gotten to me.
She was three generations before your mother. A very talented belle named the Favourite. But she didn't follow my instructions, or respect the honour that the goddess of beauty bestowed upon me. So I took her from court and kept her at La Maison Rouge. I never let her return to court. I will do that again if you can't fall in line. There's far too much passion in your blood, Camellia.
She waves to Bree, and I'm dismissed. I stand and walk to the door with a servant at my side. Each beat of my heart echoes in my ears.
Whether you're chosen to be here or are assigned to one of the tea houses, I can bring you home at any time, DuBarry says. Elizabeth will be watching. I will be watching. Now, fetch Adel.
The doors close behind me. 9. Through breakfast, and then bathing in the onsen, DuBarry's words drum through me like a vibration whose ripple won't stop. I'm floating outside of everything around me, unable to stay anchored. After lunch, I stand on a seamstress block in the slip and hooped petticoat in the royal dress salon. Servants drape tape measures along our waists and our arms and legs, and scribble numbers on parchment papers. Elizabeth watches us. The memory of the morning conversation creeps over me again.
What happened with Du Barry? Padma asks me. Are you all right?
Fine. I try to smile. Everything will be fine. You don't look it. Hannah reaches over to rub my shoulder.
She threatened me,
Adel says proudly. Elizabeth clears her throat, and Adel speaks even louder.
She got so mad, I thought a vein would pop right out of her neck.
Do you take anything seriously?
Amber asks.
You do enough of that for all of us,
Adel replies. Du Barry told me she'd have the beauty minister speak with me, like I'm supposed to be afraid or something. She laughs, but I can't stop being scared. I don't want this to slip away.
I can't tell if the beauty minister is mean or nice, Hannah says. I haven't decided what I think of her yet. Who cares if she's nice?
Adel fusses with the servant attempting to measure her arms.
I don't plan on talking with her about my behaviour.
She's been elected twice,
Valerie says, then touches her stomach.
Why can't one of you give me a smaller waist? My numbers are bigger than yours.
It would make us sick, Valerie, Amber snaps.
I know, I was just...
Valerie's tawny brown skin pinkens, and she frowns.
Still upset, Amber.
Adel's pale eyebrow lifts. Because there's no excuse for your annoying temperament after we've had such a delicious lunch.
Padma tisks her tongue like Du Barry.
Hannah shakes her head.
Just stating the truth, Amber says.
Well, your body is a pole,
Adel says.
Nobody would want you, even if you were interested in experiencing it.
You don't have to be so rude. I swear you're the most unmannered of us all, Amber says. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, Valerie. The goddess of beauty made you just the way she wanted you. At least you have breasts.
Yes, and you're flat as a crepe, Amber.
Adel leaps off her block, shoving away another servant. Hourglass figures and beautiful round bodies will always be coveted if I'm the favourite. She grabs Valerie and pulls her down as well. She hooks her arms around her waist, nuzzling her face into Valerie's neck.
I'd give anything to be shaped like you.
Valerie giggles. Adel reaches for me, yanking me down with them. She spins us around and around. We laugh and screech and skip away from the servants.
Don't be so sad, or let Du Barry get to you, little fox,
Adel whispers.
Who cares what she says?
Elizabeth tugs at us.
Get back to your places.
No.
Adel blows her a kiss. I wish I could be more like Adel. Want this life a little less.
Back to your dress blocks,
the servants say. We keep spinning.
Girls!
Elizabeth shouts. We turn again and again. We don't stop. Hannah joins us. Amber sighs. Padma laughs hysterically.
There will be order, Elizabeth hollers. There will be order,
Adel parrots, and we all giggle.
Ladies, please, we must proceed,
one of the seamstresses says. The doors snap open. Adel, Valerie, Hannah, and I freeze. Amber and Padma scream and try to cover themselves.
Royal Fashion Minister Gustave de Polignac, an attendant announces.
Why, hello!
A purple-suited man saunters in, followed by a train of powdered and prim-looking men carrying notebooks, and a set of tailors and seamstresses who wheel in massive spinning looms.
I see we have quite the festivities going on in here, and not to worry, girls, there's nothing I haven't seen.
The man has beautiful features, with a deep brown face freckled like a chocolate chip cookie. He presses a hand to his chest, drumming jeweled fingernails. The beauty minister trails behind him. Her hair is fashioned into a bird's nest, complete with a pair of live blue jays in it. They chirp out at us. She smiles at me, and her teeth look stark white like the keys of a piano.
"They're a spirited bunch," he says to the beauty minister.
He kisses both of her cheeks, careful not to leave behind the bright purple rouge stick he wears. Dubarry enters last, starting a round of applause. The rest of us join in. The fashion minister bows, then smiles up at us. I've seen him in newspapers, demonstrating the proper way to wear a corset according to imperial beauty laws, tight enough to fit within the desirable measurements for a proper citizen of Orléans, but fashionable enough to create the perfect silhouette, like an hourglass. He's the fashion tastemaker of the kingdom and is in charge of all garment production.
At your service.
He's here to work his magic, the beauty minister says, with his team. The other well-dressed men smile at her, and a few blush.
Yes, my dandies and I are here to the rescue. A belle needs an elegant wardrobe, just like an artiste needs a variety of ink and paint.
He waves a gold-tipped cane in the air. His heels click and clack as he circles us, his gaze like a strong beam of light. He leans in and whispers,
"Welcome to court."
We jump and then laugh.
"Stop frightening them, Gustave. You know they're not used to men lurking about," the beauty minister says.
"No need to be afraid of me, little dolls. I'm so uninterested in female comfort. I'm here to make sure you always have the proper dress to wear. I would dare say, upon penalty of death, that fashion is the most important element to beauty."
The beauty minister gives him a light push. They kiss each other's cheeks again.
"You are looking well," he purrs.
One of the fashion minister's attendants slides his ermine-lined robe from his shoulders, exposing a gold medallion with his royal minister emblem. Another attendant fluffs his hair with a wide-toothed comb. He waves a flash hand made of diamonds around, thanking his team. He inspects Elizabeth.
"Is this the little Dubarry, here at court to learn the ropes?"
She curtsies.
"I'm Elizabeth Amy Long Dubarry, daughter of the gardienne de la Belle Rose, and I know plenty about court."
"But do you know the slightest thing about beauty?"
he asks.
"By the look of you, I'd say not."
Adel chuckles, but a look from Dubarry silences her.
"Of course she does, Gustave. She is my daughter," Dubarry says with pride.
He does a lap around Elizabeth, then returns to Dubarry's side.
"There's much work to be done here, Anna, for her to fill your shoes."
He kisses the reluctant cheek offered up by Dubarry.
"But for now, it's time to dress the bells, and for the whole world to find out who has been chosen."
Servants put up privacy screens and unpack the trunks. Silks, woolens, crinolines, cottons, satins, taffetas, tulles, and velvets are stretched over long tables by teams of people. Tiered trays hold buttons, lace, ribbons, gems, jewels, and hundreds of other baubles. A servant rushes me behind a screen and helps me up on a dress block. She unties the sash around my slip, undoes the petticoat ribbons, and removes my crinoline. A seamstress joins us, towing a kit.
"What kind of dress will you make?" I ask.
"The kind the fashion minister told me to. He picked out colours for you based on your complexion." She sits at a massive machine that boasts 3 spindle wheels and 2 looms. Her thick hands lace the string through a series of loops and pegs. She presses her foot on a pedal. The machine roars to life, creaking like a rickety carriage on a cobblestone street. Red, black, and white threads zip in and around a set of dowels. Even though I've been dressed and measured and primped so many times, I still hate the feeling in these moments that my body doesn't belong to me. I become a doll, an object to be embellished. I wonder if this is how women feel on our treatment tables.
I wish I could pick out my own dress. I'd choose something simple, a shade of red to match Maman's hair, a high waist with a cream waist sash, and a sweeping skirt that flows out like a silk river behind me. Another servant helps me into a robe and leads me to the bathing chamber for our second bath of the day. Beauty lanterns cast a warm glow on pink-tiled walls and gilded mirrors. A series of claw-footed tubs lines one side. Amber sits in front of a mirror with her beauty cass. Valerie and Hannah are rushed into the tubs. Adel's wet hair is fanned dry by three people. I tangle my feet up in the plush floor rugs. My bath is drawn, and I'm in and out of it before the water can soak fully into my skin. An onsen servant leads me to a vanity. With fluid movements, she wipes my arms, legs, and face with a damp, rose-scented cloth, and cuts and buffs my nails, then paints and dries them. She puts my feet into little red shoes. Another woman touches my eyelids, making me close them. I hear them unhook the compartments of my beauty cass. Now I'm the one to be made beautiful. She powders my face and rubs a rouge stick over my lips. The clicks of bell pencils echo. She lines my eyes with two different kohl tips. Layer after layer of bell powder and rouge are applied to my cheeks and eyes. She rubs a waxy perfume stick behind my ears and along my wrists. The soft powders and pencils and warm creams relax me. It would be easier if I could use my arcana on myself, even though DuBarry says it's impossible. The arcana are for the service of others. I imagine my new life-to-be. Being chosen, living at the palace, enjoying all the court has to offer, creating beautiful people. I take deep breaths, but DuBarry's words hover around me like the beauty lanterns. Hair is next. The servant sections my hair, combing it through. The steam from the rollers creates a cloud around me, and their warmth seeps into my scalp as she sets my curls with them. Big waves hit my shoulders and are quickly pinned up in a signature bell bun with bell rose petals to prevent frizzing. The women rush me from this room to our dressing stalls. Bree waits for me. She fits me in a patterned long-sleeved gown in black and white. I've never worn any other color besides the deep pink DuBarry claims brings out the honey undertones in my brown skin. Bree's deft fingers close a series of hooks and clasps along my back. A blood-red waist sash is tied at the middle to gather the skirts into the perfect bell shape.
"You look beautiful, my lady," she says.
"Thank you," I reply.
"Are you excited to see the royal family and court?"
Bree asks. "Yes, I am." Our eyes meet in the mirror. I welcome the conversation. "What is the queen like?"
"Gracious, my lady," she whispers.
"And the princess?"
"Gracious, my lady,"
she says again, but her voice quivers.
"Long live the queen and the princess."
I repeat the blessing as well.
"It's time, little dolls," the fashion minister calls out.
We step out from behind the dressing screens. The beauty minister gasps and claps. She fawns over us and the dresses and our new looks. The fashion minister beams and takes us one by one to parade around the room. Padma wears a bright purple dress with an empire waist that falls in a clean line to the floor. The silk ripples out behind her in waves, and jewels crawl in a pattern up her arms like snakes. Adel's dress spills over with layers of rubies and her Edelweiss flowers. Her movements echo through the near-silent room. The cream strapless gown Valerie wears hugs tightly around her curves before blooming out in a fish's tail. Hannah's silk gown boasts hand-painted images of our island and its cypress trees, and her sleeves swing low to the ground. Soft golden silk wraps around Amber's lean frame, and her bell bun is bursting with yellow ribbons like sunbeams. She's never looked more beautiful. A mirror is brought out. My heart punches inside my chest. The reflection in the mirror looks like a stranger. My makeup is done up like a courtier in a beauty scope, thickly lined eyes with gold accents, red jewels dotted along my eyebrows, a powdered face, bright lips. My bell bun spills over with bell roses, and the dress hugs me so closely I have a shape I've never seen on me before. The shape of my mother. Du Barry goes down the line, kissing each of us on the cheek. When she gets to me, she whispers,
"You look nice. Your mother would approve."
She touches the textured pattern of my gown. I picture my mother's face, and I feel her proud and admiring smile deep inside.
"What do you think?" the fashion minister asks us.
"I love it," I whisper, as my sisters squeal.
"I figured I shouldn't dress you traditionally. It's time to modernize bells, in my humble opinion."
"Du Barry has been so ancient in her preparations," he says under his breath.
"What was that, Gustave?"
Du Barry asks.
"Oh, nothing,"
he winks at us. The beauty minister taps his shoulder with a fan, then looks at me and my sisters.
"It's time to go learn your fates."
10. A plush red carpet cuts through the middle of the receiving hall like a thick river of blood. On either side of the aisle sit high-backed chairs filled with undeniably elegant women dressed in colourful silks, taffetas, satins, and crepes. Men ring the perimeter, and a sea of top hats peaks above the women's headdresses, fans, and tall hairstyles. People place eyescopes and spyglasses to their faces, squinting to see us. Over my head, a glass ceiling etched with the Orleansian royal emblem lets in light from the early evening stars.
"Eyes forward," the beauty minister whispers, before we take our first steps inside.
Imperial guards wear deep purple vestments. The Queen's divine colour. I drown under the weight of the many stares. These people are the most important in the entire kingdom. The beauty minister is silhouetted ahead, her pace slow and steady as we approach the pure gold chrysanthemum throne. My knees shake a little as I move closer. I try to steady them. I follow behind Padma. The lotus flowers in her hair open and close, winking at the onlookers. A rustling of sound follows me. Women lean into one another and mumble behind lace fans. They look at me like I'm a slice of spiced cake waiting to be eaten. Newsies sketch pictures of us, and black gossip post balloons shift in and out of the crowd, their tails whipping in all directions, trying to catch a scandalous word here or there. At the front of the room, a set of golden gazebos cluster to the left and right of the throne platform, each one covered with a canopy of flowers and garlands. A royal attendant helps me to step into one, marked with my name and camellia flowers. My sisters stand beside me in theirs. A pyramid of stairs leads up to four thrones. They glimmer in the light of the dusk lanterns and hold the three most important people in the entire world. King Francis, Queen Celeste, and Princess Sophia. The second to last chair is left empty to represent the invalid Princess Charlotte. She hasn't been seen for years. Newsies speculate she's being kept alive so the monarchy doesn't pass the crown to Princess Sophia. The papers say Princess Sophia will make a terrible queen, that she's a spendthrift and loves to gamble and entertain with extravagant parties. But if the stories are true, I'm more than intrigued. She sounds impulsive, thrill-seeking, explosive, and above all, fascinating. The queen descends from her throne. Guards fan out behind her like a cluster of shelled insects. Streaks of golden paint shimmer and twist into beautiful shapes on her skin. Sapphires decorate the slopes of her bright eyes. Her dark hair has a shock of grey in the front, like a vanilla swirl in a cream cone. The tattlers say she leaves it there to pay homage to the roots of Orléans, the Gris. The princess joins her. She matches her mother today. Same beautiful brown skin and soft oval face. Most families desire to be a matched set. Mothers determine the family features and manage their children's outward appearance, especially the families from high houses. But Princess Sophia has always changed what she looks like, as if she were merely donning a different dress. A teacup monkey perches on her shoulder. I suck in my breath and hold it in my chest until the queen speaks. Every whisper, murmur, hum disappears. Welcome, my trusted advisers, my beloved ladies, and my ever-loyal court. She waves a hand in the air. To the most important day in our kingdom. The naming of our most glorious treasure. She faces us. Beautiful bells, welcome to my court and the beginnings of your divine service to our world. Without you and the gods, we would be nothing. The room rumbles with applause. Its echo beats in my chest. Feast your eyes on our new generation of bells. I knit my fingers in my lap as the entire crowd turns its attention from her to us. Servants open one of the floor-to-ceiling windows along the east wall, and scarlet post balloons fly in. They sail over us, zipping and dipping and spinning, their little compasses guiding them to the throne platform. The tiny blimps dangle bell cards from golden ropes, rich, animated, glossy. They tease the hands grabbing for them, coming close enough to be touched but not caught. I spot my face on one, but the ink waxes and wanes, changing too quickly for me to read it and know my fate. These royal bell cards will be sent to every single citizen of the kingdom, the 5 major islands and the smaller outlying clusters. If anyone has forgotten your names after the Beauté Carnival, they'll remember them all in a matter of moments, the queen says. The spectators clap. Now, my dearest court, cast your coins before I reveal the favourite. Let us see if we've picked the same bell. May you always find beauty. The women and men and a few children rush from their seats like a swarm of bees. They buzz around the gazebos, dropping coins into baskets held by servants who kneel beside them. They push eyescopes and spyglasses to their eyes and squint at our faces. They flap their fans at us. They listen through ear trumpets for responses to their questions. What are your thoughts on coral-coloured eyes? Pale white skin turns grey faster. Can you remedy that?
Could you give me a new face? Do you think the laws could adjust and allow for smaller waistlines?
My skin is getting old and doesn't take colour well anymore. Can you fix that?
Any opinion on smaller breasts this season versus larger ones? I like the trend of darker skin and light eyes. Will that be back in fashion? Any ideas on extending how long beauty treatments last?
I can't answer one question before another one comes. The faces and voices blur into a spinning mass. One face sticks out of the herd crowding around me. The boy from the gate. I feel his presence like a teacup dragon. Loud, commanding, full of fire. Courtier girls are watching him, some giggle behind their gloved hands and painted fans, and others ask him questions he leaves unacknowledged. He struts to the front of the line, and people clear a path for him. My eyes travel from the sapphire-blue cravat at his neck to the royal emblem pinned to it. Two ships sailing along the curve of a chrysanthemum stem. He's one of the sons of the Minister of Seas. A drum beats inside me.
I try not to stare. I try to pretend he's not gazing at me. I try to act like I don't remember him. He starts to drop his coin in my basket, then pulls his hand back. His gaze burns my skin. A deep flush climbs from my stomach to my cheeks. "Do you have a question?" I ask.
"Oh, she speaks."
The pitch of his voice is richer than the darkest chocolate. He hides a smile behind his hand. "I'm not a doll."
"I didn't think you were."
He reaches for my hand. I feel the heat of it through my lace glove. I pull away. A guard steps forward.
"No touching."
He flashes his palms.
"I meant no offense. I'm Auguste Fabry, son of the Minister of the Seas, a harmless sailor. I just wanted to offer Lady..."
He cranes to look up at the sign twinkling with my name.
"Camellia, my sincerest apologies. She's upset with me."
I bite back a smile, fighting with the corners of my mouth. "What is it? I'm very busy and have a long line," I tease.
"Very well. Do you think men should be as beautiful as women?"
His question curls around me like smoke, sliding over and under my skin and through my dress. His words hold a challenge, one I want to win. The women around my gazebo grow quiet. A nervous tremor flutters in my stomach. I think it's unfair that women must parade around like peacocks and men do not. There should be an equal effort. The left side of his mouth lifts in a smile.
"But aren't women supposed to be more beautiful than men in order to be enjoyed?"
"Are women quills or teletropes or new carriages?" Heat rises to my cheeks. He doesn't break eye contact. Women fan themselves and trade whispers and gasps. Their eyes dart from me to him and back again.
"No, they are not."
He hides a smile beneath his hand.
"It seems I know just what to say to make you angry with me."
"It seems you say stupid things."
"But it was a question, not a statement."
I sigh, even though I enjoy sparring with him. It's different than arguing with my sisters.
"Final question," he says, lifting his coin in the air.
"I think you've asked enough questions and slowed down my line."
"Just one more." "Is that all right?"
He pokes his bottom lip out, like he's a child on the edge of a tantrum. The women fuss, goading me into allowing it.
"Go on," I demand, feigning annoyance. "If you could change anything about me, what would it be?" he asks.
"You will have to make a private appointment for us to discuss your options."
"I'll take that answer to mean you change nothing."
The women snicker, coo, and shower him with compliments. He grins at me as he basks in it. I want to laugh, but hold the outburst in my chest. I will not smile. I will not let him know that he amuses me.
"But if you want my coin..."
He rubs his hand under his chin and his dark brows slant up.
"You'll have to tell me. Because maybe I should give you my vote."
He dangles the coin over the basket again.
"Or maybe I shouldn't."
"Save your coins. I have plenty," I say. "My sisters are just as talented."
"But are they as beautiful?"
Nearby women burst with chatter. I blush.
"I think you might make for an interesting favourite. Plus, I like to place a good bet."
He drops the coin in just as the baskets are collected. Then he disappears into the crowd. Traces of his smug attitude linger like perfume, distracting me from an onslaught of new questions. I search for him in the masses, wanting to tell him I'm not here for him to find me beautiful. I'm here to help the world. I'm not an ornament. The Queen returns to her throne, and she nods at the Beauty Minister.
"It's time,"
the Beauty Minister says into a voice trumpet. New scarlet post balloons zip through the room, glowing bright with our bell emblem. They circle over the beauty minister like tanager birds looking for their nest. She reaches for one of the blimps and removes the card.
First up, Valeria Beauregard.
Valerie steps out of her gazebo. You will return home to Maison Rouge de la Beauté. Valerie bows. When she returns to her platform, she looks at the ground and tries to catch the tears falling down her face. We all clap for her. The beauty minister reaches for another card. I resist bunching my dress.
Edelweiss Beauregard, she says. Yes,
Adel accidentally calls out before clapping a hand over her mouth. The beauty minister smiles at her.
My lovely, you will be at the fire tea house in the fire aisles, she says.
Adel curtsies.
Hannah Beauregard.
Hannah snaps upright. Her hands dig into the folds of her dress as she walks out of her gazebo. She doesn't look at the beauty minister. Her eyes are fixed on the ground. A few cherry blossom petals fall from her bell bun. She takes in a large breath. The beauty minister scans the bell card.
You will be at the glass tea house in the glass aisles.
Hannah exhales, claps her hands together, then bows.
Padma Beauregard, you will be at the silk tea house in the Bay of Silk, the beauty minister says.
Padma's chin drops to her chest. Tears stream down her cheeks, and she does her best to wipe them away. A sob escapes her. She covers her mouth. A nearby servant rubs her back and whispers something to her. Two blimps linger over the beauty minister's head, chasing each other in a perfect circle. This is it. I look at Amber to my left. She winks at me. I blow her a silent kiss and cross my fingers for both of us. I tell myself, if it isn't me, then I'll be happy it's her. I hope she feels the same. I ignore the tiny voice inside me that whispers, "You're lying." The beauty minister reaches for the cards displaying our fates. I stand up straight and ball my fists in anticipation of what she's going to say. The girls watch and wait.
"Camelia Beauregard," she says.
I walk forward. Fear and excitement climb over me like vines. My palms itch. My face feels flushed. I don't know whether I want to vomit, shriek, or both. My heartbeat hammers in my ears.
"You'll be at the Chrysanthemum Tea House in the Rose Cartier of our imperial city of Trianon."
My cheeks flame, and I know they're red as strawberries.
My heart plummets into my stomach with a crash.
Sweat streams down my back, but I start to say before Dubarry glares at me. I bow and return to my gazebo. My chest heaves. I might never be able to catch my breath again. The queen stands. The beauty minister turns to her.
"Ambrosia Beauregard."
The queen stretches out the syllables of her name. Amber steps forward, eyes gazing ahead, shoulders back, slight smile on her face, looking exactly how Dubarry trained us to. Gracious, alert, always ready.
"You have been named the favorite,"
the beauty minister announces. The word explodes through the room like a cannon. I put a hand over my mouth. The queen claps.
"Ambrosia is the favorite."
A servant dumps out Amber's basket. Coins splatter on the floor and make a golden mountain. The court cast many bets for her. I can't take my eyes off Amber. The queen smiles at my sister. My heart shatters like a glass mirror, the tiny shards shooting out into every part of me, cutting at my insides, spreading pain. They will never be put back together. Dubarry keeps her arms crossed over her ample chest. She gives me a satisfied look. I am not the favorite. The words smash into one another inside my head.
I am not the favorite.
Hands reach for me. Lips kiss my cheeks, leaving smudges of rouge stick behind. People swarm in a thousand directions. Women squeeze my hands. They tell me how excited they are to book appointments with me at the Chrysanthemum Tea House. People applaud. Lights flash. Arms pull me into hugs and twirls. Some whisper that they thought it should have been me. Newsies flock around, shoving voice trumpets in my face and pestering me with questions about Amber and my opinion about the Queen's selection of the favourite. I bite back tears. I push them down with too sweet champagne. Amber is surrounded, her ginger bell bun a tiny crest above the crowd. Du Barry gives an interview about what she was like as a child. Studious, deferential, loving. The beauty minister tells royal listeners what criteria the ministers and the queen used to choose the favourite this season. Disciplined, dutiful, responsible. My sisters bounce around in their beautiful dresses and speak to other courtiers and newsies. The room swirls around me. The queen's words ring out. Ambrosia is the favourite. Alongside the racing thrum of my heart. 11. The evening whizzes by like the spinning of a newsreel. My sisters dance and laugh and give interviews and kiss cheeks and eat sweets. We have our portraits painted and talk to our big sisters, the previous generation of Bells. I hide in an adjacent tea salon to avoid the newsies until we return to the Bell apartments. Amber doesn't come with us. She lingers in the grand imperial ballroom, surrounded by well-wishers and courtiers who clamour for her attention. I watch the doors. I wait for her to walk in. Bell trunks are lined up in the middle of the main salon like coffins. Servants fill them with beauty casses, new dresses and shoes from the fashion minister, the latest Bell products, and Sansour jars. Hannah peers into her trunk. We're not going to be together any more.
Is it that time already? Padma whines. I don't want to go yet.
I don't either. The pinch of it comes sweeping back, and I'm near tears. I face the wall and pretend to admire the tapestry map of Orléans.
The carriages will be here soon.
Valerie collapses into a nearby chaise. Her dress rips, but she's too tired to look down at the fishtail train that's threatening to fall off. And I saw our big sisters leave another apartment in travelling cloaks, Hannah says. A pause settles over us. Tears well up in Padma's and Hannah's eyes. Adel's cheeks flush. Valerie sniffles. I look away. The uneasy silence feels suffocating. I'm ready to get this over with. Adel throws her shoes into her bell trunk. Servants present trays of fizzy water overflowing with raspberries, snowmelon slices, strawberries and limes. Carts hold late-night treats, petite waffles, sugary syrups, fried sweetbread and chicken, and lunar pastries. Three teletropes project pictures on the walls. The magic of the night flashes all around us, but I feel only disappointment. A sad tremor lives inside my chest, and my arms and legs buzz with the memory of not being chosen.
"Where's Amber?"
Valerie asks. The sound of her name feels like a sparkler explosion. "Gloating somewhere, no doubt," Adel says. "I haven't seen her since the dinner." Hannah opens the doors of the Bell apartments to peek out. "She probably has a dozen things to do now," I mumble. "I didn't want her to win," Adel states.
"That's a terrible thing to say,"
Padma gives her a playful shove.
"Why do you think the Queen picked her?"
Valerie asks. "Because she's always perfect." The words slip out heavy and hard. My sisters turn to me. I bite my bottom lip to keep it from quivering. A tiny hiccup works its way up my throat. I'm relieved when the servants take us to the dress salon. Servants remove our gowns.
were given soft travelling dresses made of cotton and chambray and voile and gauze. The sadness of leaving hits me in a wave. I've never not seen my sisters every day. Hannah's morning grumpiness, Adel always getting in trouble, Valerie's tinkling laugh, walking the grounds with Padma, and sharing secrets with Amber. I didn't think about how far away they'd be after we received our assignments. I didn't think about how different things would be between us. We pile back into the main salon and eat food from the carts.
I think it's time for a toast.
Padma grabs a glass from the tray. Bubbly green liquid spills on the front of her travel dress and she curses.
Should we wait for Amber?
Valerie asks. No, the rest of us say. Hannah lays her head on my shoulder.
I thought it would be you.
Thanks,
I whisper.
Me too.
Quiet down and come on,
Padma tries to get everyone's attention.
Get a drink. I don't know how much longer we have together tonight.
Adel gulps down a flute of red liquid and takes another. Valerie fusses at her for drinking the last one. Padma clears her throat.
Cheers to each other. Cheers to this night, and cheers to what's to come.
We lift our glasses and sip.
Me next!
Valerie leaps up from her chaise.
Even though I was upset about my placement earlier today, and I love all this,
she waves her hand around.
In my heart, I've always known I was supposed to go back home. My maman was the belle of Maison Rouge de la Beauté, so deep down I knew that I had to fill her shoes. But please don't forget about me. Send me post balloons about the things you get to see and do. And better yet, don't get too busy to come visit.
Her voice cracks.
I will miss you all.
We take another sip. Her words hit me. She's doing what her mother did. I was supposed to be the favorite, like my maman. I've let her down.
Ugh, you girls are getting emotional,
Adel complains. Hannah jostles her shoulder, which makes Adel break out in a smile.
I guess I'll miss you all too.
Servants present us with thick travelling cloaks lined in white fur and covered in tiny gold stitches in the shape of bell roses and our royal emblem. We're slipping our arms into the cosy sleeves when Amber strides into the room. Her heavy footsteps pound the floor as if it should crumble under the weight of their importance. The petite crown on her head glitters like it is made of stardust.
Hello, my sisters!
She prances about, swishing her gown left and right, beaming brighter than a morning lantern as she waits for us to gush over her.
Congratulations!
Valerie steps forward to hug Amber.
We're so happy for you.
Hannah swirls her around and around until both of them collapse in laughter and dizziness. A selfish emotion bubbles up in my chest. It grows larger by the second, stealing my breath. It won't pop. I want to wrap my arms around her, sink my face into her neck, and whisper how proud I am of her. But my feet won't move, and my mouth is full of syrup, the words stuck.
You're going to make a beautiful favorite,
Padma blows her a kiss.
Well, Adel looks her up and down. I suppose someone had to win.
And then she sweeps out of the room. A travel attendant steps aside to let Adel go, then taps an hourglass hanging from her jacket lapel.
Carriages will soon depart.
Everyone gives Amber one last hug. I linger in the room after my sisters leave. Amber and I stare at each other.
I can't believe Adel, she says. Are you happy for me?
I am, I say, just trying to let it all sink in.
You're at the most important tea house, the Chrysanthemum. It's where the royal ladies of honour go. At least you'll be here in the city.
Don't try to make it sound better, Amber. I'm not the favourite. The sound of it out loud sends another surge of disappointment through me. I hear Maman's disappointed voice and see her furrowed brow.
But you're still important. We're all important.
It's not enough. I finally let out the little sob in my chest. She rushes forward, grabs my arms and pulls me close. I sink my face into the nook between her shoulder and neck.
It's going to be fine.
Her words land on my cheek. She smells like a mishmash of courtier perfume. She's been hugged 100 times tonight.
You'll be able to visit me, and I'll invite you to everything I can. Also, I'll come see you.
I pull away from her embrace. My failure crashes back in, hitting me in a hot wave. I am not the favourite. I can't take her pity. And when she reaches for me again, I push her away. Stop, I say. She looks hurt, but there's nothing I can do.
You can't be happy for me.
A tornado of heat swirls around me. My stomach flip-flops and my face runs with sweat. I am. I fight back tears. Can't she see how hard this is?
You thought you'd beat me easily. You got to go last at the Butte Carnival. Anyone who goes last gets to leave the best impression. Placement drowned out those of us in the middle. Dubarry set you up to be the favourite, but the Queen chose me.
Is that what you really think? Dubarry doesn't like me, never has. She's never understood what I have to offer, I say, searching Amber's face for traces of my friend. Do you know how hard I worked? Researching for months about past carnivals, thinking through different looks, stealing Dubarry's pamphlets and beauty magazines from the mail chest to study trends. I worked just as hard as you did.
Well, you didn't follow the rules at the carnival, or ever, really, she says. You didn't deserve to be the favourite.
I glare at her. A wrinkle of concentration mars her forehead.
You're my best friend, she says. You should have been the first one to kiss me after the announcement, and the first one to tell me how proud you were. Instead, you're sulking and being jealous. I followed the rules, Camellia. I deserve this. You don't. You always get so upset when I beat you at anything. What would Maman Linnea think of your behaviour?
Don't bring up my mother. My eyes fill with tears. My fists clench. I shake with anger. Amber leans in close.
She would be ashamed of you.
She grabs my wrist and I yank away, pulling her off balance. Amber lets out a half-surprised, half-anguished shout and she falls to the ground. I gasp, Amber, I didn't mean... Her eyes drill into me. Her cheeks burn with redness, and her once elaborate eye makeup runs down her cheeks in orange and gold streaks. I'm so sorry. I reach for her. She scoots away and crawls to her knees, then stands.
Don't touch me.
A travel attendant peers into the salon.
Lady Camellia, your carriage awaits.
Amber won't even look at me. I turn and run from the room. An angry knot hardens inside my gut, and a headache punches its way up my neck and into my temples. I race down the stairs to catch up with the rest of my sisters, as her words repeat over and over again to the beat of my footsteps. She would be ashamed. She would be ashamed. 12. The carriage wheels thump against the cobblestones in the Royal Square. I peel back the curtains, and diamond-paned city lanterns illuminate rich limestone mansions and townhouses in the aristocratic Rose Quartier. Their pillars cut the skyline like expensive blades. The moon paints the sky in deep violets and indigos. The horses whinny and neigh as the driver navigates the sharp turns and narrow lanes of the imperial city of Trianon.
Lady Camellia, a familiar voice says.
I glance away from the window, A pale face peeks out from behind a curtain. It's the servant from the palace's bell apartments. Her brown dress is a smudge of chocolate against the wine red of the carriage's interior. I remember you, Bree. She flushes pink.
I've been assigned to you as your imperial servant.
Wonderful. I tried to be gracious, just as DuBarry has taught me.
Would you care for something to eat?
No. I return to the sights beyond the carriage.
How about tea?
She takes a pot from a tiny hearth that holds a warm, crackling fire. I'm not thirsty. She removes the lid and flashes the steeping bell roses inside.
It's to help you relax before your arrival.
She pours me a cup. When served to clients, it's supposed to keep their arms and legs from trembling, quiet their fears or anticipation, and help dull the pain of beauty transformations. On second thought, I swallow the liquid down in one gulp. It burns all the way to my stomach, and I wish it had the power to erase the memory of my fight with Amber. I want to forget the whole night. I peer outside again as the world becomes a blur of light and colour. Spires of smoke twist up and disappear into the sky. We move through the market quartier, still busy with merchants selling wares better suited to the dark. Cobalt-blue lanterns hang from every stall and swing above every saloon, beckoning late-night patrons. Vendors holler that they have the best spyglasses for sale. A trio of women hold up bracelets on raised arms. A man offers carved pipes and powders that promise wishes and dreams, while another curves ear trumpets in the air like a series of elephant trunks. There are scowls and flashing of teeth and sluggish smiles. The fuss of haggling tongues deafens me. The lantern colours change from deep blues to emerald greens as we enter the garden courtier. The world should be like a garden with people bright as roses and lilies and tulips. Otherwise it's all a waste, Maman used to say. Towers curve above painted avenue boards. The promenades boast animated cameos and portraits of framed courtiers that wink and wave as we pass. Rose-shaped pavilions sell snowmelon cider, peach champagne, fluffy beignet, and lunar pastries. The scents slip in through the window. Bree takes my cup. We'll be arriving soon. A scarlet glow pushes into the carriage, washing my arms and legs in red stripes. Beauty lanterns drift along streets paved with glistening stones, past mismatched shops painted in pastel shades and lined up like the frosted pastries in a bakery window. The stores branch into a maze of twisting alleys. Bell products twinkle behind glass window panes. I try to get excited. I try to take in how pretty it all is. But my mind reminds me that I am not the favourite, and I am not at the palace. This is the consolation prize. The chrysanthemum tea-house glows in lavenders and magentas and reds. 10 stories high, its elegant turrets hold balconies trimmed with shiny night ivy. It climbs the walls, scaling so high it could grow off the tea-house and make a path to the god of the sky. The golden walkway licks out like a tongue. Crimson sill lanterns sit at each window and cast their bloody light over the courtyard. People crowd along the tea-house grounds. Newsies hold up light boxes. Men and women affix spyglasses to their eyes. Children, up too late, wave their little hands. The carriage stops. The door opens.
Lady Camellia! An attendant presents me with his arm. Right this way.
I step out. A full staff awaits.
Camellia! Camellia!
I wave to the shouting crowd and try to smile with the perfect amount of teeth, just as DuBarry taught us. I pretend to be happy. I'm led across the walkway. I bow, then wave the onlookers goodbye as the tea-house doors shut behind me. The inside blazes with light. Soft golden rays dance over the floor. The space carries the scent of charcoal and flowers.